The winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guest, heard on Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. You can call us at 434-1790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679 or an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guest is brought to you in association with our very good friends at Wrong Hair Pharmacy and the Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
When the double draw, you're playing with the mega ball. It's tripling, you can triple your winnings just for one more dollar. You can play from a spot one right up to a spot six. Then you wager another dollar, and that's how you mega ball it. Bronze mega ball,
30,000.
Silver mega ball,
40,000.
Gold mega ball,
50,000.
More and more and more you're winning. Put down another dollar, and then you holler.
Make your winnings even bigger. Call for the Mega Ball today. Promotion ends August 8th, 2020.
Well, the West Indies, we were hoping that they would have been able to hold on. Lots of rain on the fourth day. In fact, it rained cats and dogs and pigs. And there was some rain again today. But you know what? The West Indies lost. And tonight, on Mason and Guess, we are going to be looking for answers. Where did the Windies go wrong? I don't even want to talk about the scorecard because it is the kind of reading that is very depressing. But I'll give it to you. 197 in the first sentence. And as they would say in Barbadian parlance, didn't last as long as a snow cone, to be dismissed for 129 batting the second time. The English were large and in charge in their own backyard. Listen to this. 369, and not for the first time in this series, making a declaration. In fact, they declared at 226 for two, and the West Indies, they lost big. I'm Andrew Mason. We've got, of course, Dr. Andrew Ford, my co-host. And without any further ado, we're going to go to London. Well, I don't know if the guys are in London, but we've got Gladson Small with a big smile already. We also have, as well, Toby Radford there, and we've also got Philo Alfonso Wallace. They're going to be very much with us at the start of the program. I know, Gladson, you're going to be with us for just about half an hour. We're going to start with you, Toby, the former batting coach of the West Indies side. Good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening. Very well, thank you. How are you?
All right, fine. All right. Could you tell us what happened? What did the West Indies do wrong?
Well, I think we're all a bit shocked after the excellent performance in Southampton, what, just over 2-3 weeks ago, where, you know, obviously the team played really well, won convincingly, and then suddenly gone back to Manchester, where they'd had their camp for a month. And from the minute they arrived in Manchester, two games, two losses, and looked a very different side. I mean, honestly, didn't see that coming. Having gone 1-0 up against England, away from home, you don't then see them losing that series. So, very disappointing end to what had started as such a great tour, you know.
Mm-hmm. Gladson Small, what went wrong? Can you tell me?
Listen, firstly, we've got to congratulate, a big thank you in England here. A big thank you to West Indies for coming over to the UK in unusual circumstances. I mean, I mean, and credit to the, obviously the powers that be there to get the team, to get the guys that came over. But you got to feel there are mitigating circumstances. These guys, young men, 6 weeks in basically solitary confinement. You know, and England is a nice place to be, even though even Manchester, where it does rain quite often. And these guys, the young guys, they have friends, family, quite a few of them have played up in England before, either at counties or even club cricket. So they've got lots of people that would have gotten up. And when things are going great, being in a bubble is okay. When things are going against you, seeing the same faces and people day in, day out, you can't get away from that environment. things fester. And it must have been tough. It must have been tough. And listen, a lot of credit has got to go, particularly to, if it was a school report after the series, you'll have to say the bowlers tried brilliantly. You probably mark them like a B minus, probably, I would say, for the bowlers. I thought they were big-hearted, kept going. But you know, three test matches in 3 weeks with it's unrelenting. Batsmen, geez, I can only see them getting an F.
An F. Oh my golly! So they failed miserably then.
That's probably being generous. I mean, the amount of against good bowling. Now listen, credit where credit is due. England bowlers, obviously the records are there. Anderson and Broad and you know, when Stokes, he missed it. A good job. He was the broadest test match. We finished in 2 days. You know, Walks, fine bowlers, you know, and obviously Jaffer Archer. He already took a wicket, quite frankly. But listen, those English bowlers are brilliant in English conditions with the Duke ball in hand. You know, they're very tough. And the one thing you got to do, you cannot play those guys on the back foot. You can't. I mean, Broad and Anderson, they're fine bowlers, but they're not gonna knock you over. They're not gonna intimidate you with pace. You have to get on the front foot to nullify their movement. And to see your best batsman or your most experienced batsman in the lineup, Brathwaite, how many times did he get out on the back foot?
Yes.
I mean, that for me is pure nonsense. Big failing.
Philo, your assessment of the series.
Well, good evening, Andrew. Good evening to the panelists you have.
Hi, Philo.
First of all, I'd like to offer my condolences to the former Prime Minister, Moin Seymour Arthur, his family and friends. Obviously, my good friend Sherlyn Hart, who's listening. Andrew, West Indies have not sustained the consistency that we saw in the first test match. And, you know, I think VOB has a program called Looking Back. I think that West Indies need to look back at the first test match to see all the boxes that they tick. After that first test match, Andrew, I, as a former West Indies cricketer, said, look, we can win this series because we look good. We made very few mistakes in Hampshire. So when you leave Hampshire and you have 3 days to prepare for the next game at Old Trafford, where we started, as Toby said, we had a whole month at Old Trafford. And we went there, we played so poorly in our second test match. And then today, well, the wheels have come off. And it's quite sad the way how we have finished that test series after starting so wonderfully well, with our batsmen showing fight, bowlers taking wickets, and fielders happy. To finish this series on what I would say is a low, you know, it's really going to shock the public. It's going to put us back, you know, I don't even want to say square one. I think we've gone back maybe square 10. Because we're very, very disappointed. We look very ordinary. Okay, England upped the ante in the second test match. But at least you could have competed a lot better. And then today, oh man, our bat, it was just horrible for our batsmen. I cannot believe that I saw batsmen getting out to half volleys, to pitch at balls. And the thing is that the only person that will really bowl bonkers to effect is Jaffer Archer. Called Ben Stokes obviously did not bowl in this match. The off spinner did not even bowl a ball. And we still succumb to four seamers. We succumb to four seamers. Yes, they're quality, but at least you're going to play the ball on its merit. And our batsmen did not play the deliveries on the merit, and they lost. Got out very, very soft and handed England the Wisden Trophy that will never come back to the region.
Just before I bring in Dr. Ford, just go back to Toby. You are a former batting coach of the West Indies team. Can you tell me why these guys are batting so poorly, Toby? You should know.
There were two things for me. There were two things that I really take in from the tour. One, England rotated eight seam bowlers. They were always resting a couple of seamers, or every time their bowlers played, they were fresh. As the tour went on, for whatever reason, we didn't use our backup bowlers. We carried on using the four bowlers all the way through. That's the first thing. The second thing, we were fine until Stuart Broad played. Now, when Stuart Broad plays, he bowls mid to wide crease, angles the ball in, and then nips it back in sharply, right? And the points you made, and that have already been made by the panellists, You've got to get out. You've got to kill the movement. You've got to kill the legs. You've got to get forward. Now, what we did in 2017 and last year in the Caribbean, we batted outside of the crease to negate his length. You take his length away. What the guys were doing was staying in the crease, and a lot of them, for whatever reason, misjudging the length, believing the ball was short when it was still a good length, and then it was nipping quickly back off the thing. But for me, got to get outside the crease, alter your guard to cater for the amount of movement. I didn't see them doing that. The other thing we used to do, right, we used to set up between matches, we would set up the bowling machine to replicate what you get from Stuart Broad. So we have the bowling machine wide of the crease at the pace he bowled, 86 mile an hour, and then with big in-swing to make the batters stay within their bubble, within the lines of the stumps. Mm-hmm. What's happening, if you watch, when you slow back all the wickets that are falling, all these LBWs, right, the minute the ball's coming out of the hand, the batter is going early to where the ball is starting, and then they're already falling across the line. The minute it then angles back in off the pitch or in the air, they're across the line and they're playing across the ball. But there are drills that you can do, very simple drills that we used to do on the machine to replicate what you get in the middle. Now, what I would have hoped, after Stuart Broad knocked them over in the second test match, I'd like to think that they all got together with the backroom staff and said, right, we know what they're coming with. We know what they're going to do. They're going to bowl dead straight and angle the ball in and work on that. Now, obviously, I don't know what's going on in there, whether they worked on those areas, because then you nullify their best bowler. And one bloke has basically bowled out the team. Jofra Archer didn't bowl us out. No one else bowled that West Indies team. It was only Stuart Broad. And you knew what he was going to bowl. Angled in from mid-crease back at the stumps. And all you've got to do is come up with a method and practice a method to cope with that. That's my thing. So my disappointment is seeing people, as been mentioned, stuck on the crease, not going forward, falling across the ball. You can work on that between games to put it right. That's my take.
Dr. Ford. Yeah, Doc, and we're not hearing you. Is your mic on? Okay, well, let's go to you, Philo, while Doc gets his mic on.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay. What do you think the effect of the short bowling, which was started by Stokes, had on the batsmen? Because you mentioned that a lot of the players were on the back foot. Do you think that assault from Stokes mentally damaged our batsmen and kept them always being fearful of the short ball?
I personally definitely believe what England did well, the minute that West Indies showed any partnerships, so in the second test, when Brooks and Blackwood were going really well, Stokes went round the wicket, they put in a short leg, they had a man catching on the leg side, two men back on the fence, they got aggressive, they made something happen. Now, when England were getting partnerships against us, we carried on, we didn't get aggressive. And I've always, when I was with the team, sometimes you have to say to the guys, you've got to bowl a bumper, you've got to show them the short ball to do the very thing you're saying, to get them stuck on the crease when you then bowl fuller. It may have had an impact, but it shouldn't. I mean, these are top guys. These are guys who've had hundreds, they've had big scores. You know, a couple of short balls shouldn't affect them then getting forward. You know, and Stuart Broad and Anderson, other than Archer, there's no one there of real pace that should stop you getting forward. You should be able to get forward to Broad, Wokes, Anderson. It's only Archer. And to be honest, Archer isn't going to do you for movement. He's either going to hit you on the toes or hit you on the head. He's not going to do you on the length. It's the other guys who get... It's lateral movement back into the stumps has knocked this team over in the last two matches. That's really what's gone on. Nipping back in.
Philo?
What would have been your approach to that type of
bowling?
What Philo would have done as an opener?
Philo, what would you have done?
The beauty here is that Toby is saying that the guys knew what Stuart Broad was going to bowl, and he fixed it. And obviously, they would have known this, they would have known how to get it fixed. But did they carry out? Did they follow through with it? No. And what he's saying is right. If Stuart Broad is going to bowl mid crease and angle the ball back into you, you need to look to cover your stumps and get close to the ball. You're going to force Stuart Broad to bowl a different length. And then bowling a different length is going to give you an opportunity to score. Our batsmen did not allow Stuart Broad to bowl any different length. He bowled one way and laugh. He hit Roston Chase on the pad, didn't even look back.
Yes.
He twisted his hand because he knew it's dead. Because they go across the crease, they don't go out to the ball. And my fear is that why should Ben Stokes have us fearful of a short ball? Because our batsmen are staying leg side of the ball, and when the ball is on their bodies, all they're doing is flinching like if it's a bee. They need to cover their stumps. They need to make adjustments to their stance and their guard to try to counterattack what England was throwing at them. It did not happen. Who issues that advice? I would like to ask Toby. Is it who would suggest to a batsman, I would like you to try XYZ?
I mean, look, I'm not in there at the moment, but you'd like to think you'd like to think that within the setup between matches, they're having chats with teams and with a group of batters, with the coaches there, and you'd say, you know, how are we going to combat? We know what they're going to come with. This is a war. We know what they're going to shoot us with. Right, how are we going to be ready for them? He's going to come mid-crease back in. That's the only way he's getting us out. Now, if we can stop that, he's got nowhere else to go. And the other bowlers aren't giving us a problem. None of the other bowlers are giving us a problem. So, I don't know what discussions went on. I'm only thinking if I was there, I know the type of discussion I'd want to be having with them.
Yeah,
the practices, your practices in between would be geared to setting up the machine to recreate Stuart Broad. Now, it doesn't guarantee you success, but what it does do, it gives you a good chance because you're facing a lot of balls off the machine that are going to come in the same angle that he's going to bowl when you go out there the next day. And we did it in 2017. We spent 3 hours on the bowling machine the day before Shea Hope got 200s and Craig Brathwaite got 190, and we beat England at Headingley. We spent 3 hours on a bowling machine. I set two machines up. One was Jimmy Anderson, where he delivers sharp away, swing 86 mile an hour from in close. The other one was Broad from outside 86, but with big in swing back. And I made them go through it. I said, boys, you're going to face it because I know you're going to get it tomorrow. So let's face it today. Give yourself a chance in practice. That's all. And if you don't do it, then you turn around, you say, do you know what? We did everything we possibly could. He was just too good on the day. You want to make sure that you're giving yourself the best chance. That's all. And I'm not saying they haven't done that because I don't know what they've done. They may have done it, you know, but I'm always a believer, give yourself the best chance in your preparation. And then there's nothing you can complain about it. That's it.
Well, of course, when we come back from our commercial break, we're joined by Kenny Benjamin as well. He should know something about fast bowling, our good friend from Antigua. And I really want to ask the question, I mean, were these results so surprising? We're going to start when we come back, of course, with you, Gladstone Small, as a fast bowler yourself. And, of course, we also want to get reaction from our good friend Kenny Benjamin. But, of course, Mason and Guest is brought to an association. We've got two sponsors, Round Hair Pharmacy and, of course, the Barbados Lottery, promoting new sport and culture.
Round Hair Pharmacy is your friendly neighborhood pharmacy that offers fast, reliable, courteous, and caring service. You can fill your prescriptions and consult a private pharmacist. They offer delivery service, quick sourcing of drugs, diabetic, cholesterol, and free blood pressure checks. After hours, call them at 266-6587 or 537-7863. WhatsApp at 266-6587, fax at 537-7865, or email roundhairpharmacybarbados@gmail.com or upload your prescription to their website, roundhairpharmacybarbados.com. Round Hair Pharmacy, spelled RoundHay Pharmacy, number 3, One Accord Plaza, Warren, St. Michael. Get your prescription filled. Visit their website, www.roundhairpharmacybarbados.com. Spell RoundHay.
Play the double draw. What you waiting for? Easy to play with 4 draws a day. Easy to win, so come on and play the double draw. What you waiting for? Players wanted, getting the link. Be one of many to win the thing. Just a dollar a ticket. For your chance to win it, so much millions paid out. Play to win and don't miss out. Play the double draw. What you waiting for? Play the double draw.
All right, this is Mason and Guest. I'm Andrew Mason, co-host. We've got, of course, Dr. Andrew Ford. Phil O'Wallace, former West Indies hard-hitting batsman, is in England, along with Gladstone Small, former England fast bowler. We've just been joined by former West Indies fast bowler Kenny Flipper Benjamin there in Antigua. And of course, we also have Toby Radford, the former West Indies batting coach. But you never know, that former could very well become president. You never know, Toby. I'm sure that you may be keen to have your job back. But let's go to Gladstone Small. Gladstone, these results, do they surprise you? 2-1.
The ICC world ranking is there for a reason.
Ooh.
It's a system that's accumulated over a period of time, depending on the team's performances.
Right.
And I don't know, England is obviously ranked probably in the top 3 or 4. And the West Indies The Windies are ranked, I don't know what if or no. So that doesn't lie. That doesn't really lie. That just shows that and England at home, as we mentioned earlier, are a good. But we got to go back. The Windies started this series really well, and not surprisingly, and I think these guys now they're very professional. They're prepared. They're in the bubble. And they're by a secure place. So England would have known that they're playing, but the West Indies played a really good game at Southampton. Went to Manchester in an area that they trained at for many weeks before the first Test match. So they would have got accustomed to Manchester and know how cold and wet it is up there. But they were not to expect. Started the Test match well. Got done by a really good Test match century by 100 and big 100 by Ben Stokes. But I go back to a point Toby made actually earlier when Toby was going to mention about how you have to, as a bowling unit, you cannot go on one thing, particularly when the batsman is confronting you. And Ben Stokes, for a lot of his innings, batted out front of his crease in that.
Mm-hmm.
Even against, you know, definitely against Roach. And the captain, Holder, but then he was allowed to play that way. Come this third Test match, what happened? Roach hits him on his helmet. He was batting out of his crease. Roach hit him on the helmet, and two balls later, it was a very good bit of ball, a very good ball that pitched and ducked back into him. But it put Stokes back onto his line. He wasn't batting out of his crease as he was. So as good as you are, as good a batsman as you are, and as good a form you're in, when you confront them and set them another paper, they have to react. And that's what Roach did when he hit Stokes on his helmet. He knocked Stokes. As good as he is, his confidence would have been knocked, and it knocked him back. And that was exactly what we were talking about. What we were talking about when you can't allow a bowler. If I'm a bowler, hey Benji, hey, how are you, bro? Hey, when we were bowling, as a bowler, you cannot give the bowler all the pitch, and that's where you have to move. You either go front foot to come forward to the ball, or you go back in the stumps. So you adjust the length. That's what you do. You adjust the length of the bowler. If you stand on your crease, you're giving me the whole pitch to aim at. You cannot do that at schoolboy level. You can't do that, far less more international level. And that for me was and also what I thought they started this Test match, this third Test match. I thought obviously 1-1 in the series. The weather forecast for this third Test match was bad, was poor. They knew there were going to be rain interruptions. And I thought the selection of that team for the third Test was negative and wrong. I mean, Cornwall, what was that selection about? What does he bring to the team? You've already got an off-spinning batsman, and Royston Chase in the team. What's Cornwall bring to that team? You've got to have variety in your to take 20 wickets in a Test match. You've got to have variety. So straight away for me, I just said, right, they're just playing for time here. They just want to try up runs. West Indies, they want to just dry up runs with England from scoring runs and play for time, knowing that the weather was bad. And when you start a game in a negative frame of mind, it's very, very hard to then come forward and play front foot cricket. You can't do that. You have to start off to win a Test match and play your best cricket, not to play to defend your position. So that was where I thought in this particular third Test match, I thought the team selection was wrong. And for me, the mindset was too negative.
Okay, let's go to Kenny Benjamin now, all the way in Antigua. Hello to you, Kenny. Nice to see you. How are you, Kenny? Okay, you need to turn that mic on, Kenny. We're not hearing you. Turn the mic on. Yes, I see the big finger there when you were bowling. Can we hear you now, Kenny? Kenny? Okay, I think you're there now, Kenny. Talk to us.
Going back. Yeah, it's back mute.
Okay, he's back at mute. Can he turn your mic on? Is your wife there to help you? Or your daughter, or your son, Kenny? Oh, Kenny's getting it wrong. Toby, while Kenny gets his act together,
How is that now?
Oh, you're sounding just as good as your prime minister, you know. We've been hearing a lot of your prime minister recently talking about Liat. But of course, this is not a Liat show. And we're talking to you, big Kenny Benjamin. Where did the West Indies go wrong, Kenny? Can you tell me?
I believe, let me start and say this, that I probably believe we were expecting too much. This team has been the same bunch of players over the years. Unless they got really better in the last 3 weeks when they were in England, I believe the results went as expected. England is ranked number three. Mm. We're down eight or nine. England is a better team than us. They have better players.
Mm-hmm.
We went very well in the first test. We bowled well, both innings, and we batted well, and we won the test match. We were doing well up until that halfway during the first innings of the second test, when we were 240 odd for four, and we lost four wickets for 18 runs.
Yes.
That was where we lost that test match, on the fourth day. If we had batted through, England probably wouldn't have enough time to bat again and give us. And we just went downhill from there. We saw, and I heard Radford speaking to this, maybe we don't have the ability to change quickly in terms of going in the nets between time and preparing for the next game. Because we see batters being out the same hole by the same bowler, which is suggesting, don't we have a look and see how they're trying to get us out and make some adjustment? So I'm wondering if we don't have the ability to change our approach, our style, and all of that during our methods, during a test series, because I just can't understand why no change. We see the same dismissals innings after innings, and it looks very disorganized and unprepared.
Mm. Well, Kenny, I know that Gladstone Small is going to leave us soon. It's way past his bedtime. I can see him yawning there. Yes, he wants to go to bed, and he promised he's going to spend half an hour with us. So what we're going to do, we're going to go to Gladstone. I know that Toby Radford, he knows the Caribbean very well. He's always in the gap when he's in Barbados, so he's accustomed to being out late. So he's going to stay with us. But just before you go, Gladstone Small, what do you have to say to the West Indies team? They went to England with high hopes, visions of glory. They won the first test match. We had three prime ministers come, and they were complimenting our good friend, Mr. Jason Holder. But that is really, it's almost like from the zenith to the nadir. I want you, Gladstone Small, as a Brighton St. George man, what advice do you have for the West Indies team that is coming back home? Can you tell me? Your mic is, you got to turn your mic on. We're not hearing you. Okay, we're not hearing you, Gladstone. Okay, is your mic on, Gladstone? Okay, we're not hearing him. I don't know if are we already at our end here, technically? It's Gladstone, we're not hearing you. Let's see if you can go again, Gladstone. All right. I don't know what's going on there. Gladstone, are we going to talk? Yes. Yes. So the question we're asking, what advice do you have for the West Indies team before you go to bed?
Well, listen, there is talent there. They're not all poor cricketers. You don't become, and they did show that. They showed that by beating England very well in the first test. And as Benji just said, they were in the game in that second test match. And I just thought actually they ran out of steam. Unusual, very unusual circumstances, as we said, playing these test matches and I think you've got to cut a little bit of slack for these young men, you know, in these times. They're not poor cricketers. Yes, they perform poorly, particularly this match. And I just think, yes, you've got to identify the ones you want to go carry on with. Jason Holder is a fine cricketer, and he's going to, I think his leadership skills will go from strength to strength. I would love to have seen one of your younger bowlers, one of the younger bowlers, a chance to just as you mentioned, just to has to break it up. And I'm sure I saw in the outfield today, I saw Stuart Broad talking to one of the young bowlers before the play today.
Yes, young Keon Harden.
And hopefully they've had a quite extensive period of practicing and playing. They've seen of the likes of how England at close quarters, how the likes of England would have prepared and really push on. So they've seen how a good unit perform at close quarters. And so hopefully they will take those lessons on and put them into practice. Wendy's are not a bad team. You just got beaten by a good England team in English conditions. Yes, you could have done better, but I wouldn't go beat them too badly.
All right. Well, Gladstone Small, thanks very much for coming and talking to us. And try and come home, man. We want to see you in Brighton, St. George. They missed you up there, Gladstone.
I'm back for when the breadfruit and sugarcane season's in, I'm back.
We have breadfruit and sugarcane all year round. All right. Enjoy the rest of your evening. And, of course, your night really now, because it's way past your bedtime. Enjoy the rest. Okay. So we've got, Kenny Benjamin is with us, and of course, Philo Wallace as well. Philo, I'm going to come to you now. Should heads roll here after this performance? is that a fair question, Philo?
That's a serious question.
Very serious indeed. That's
heads have rolled before. Heads have rolled before. Heads rolled before on winning.
Yes.
And now, obviously, we've lost a series, Andrew, a big series, that is. A lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of money has been put into this tour to make it a success, as it was, obviously, with this COVID-19 pandemic worldwide, and particularly coming up to England and the guys being in a bubble for some 51, 52 days. So it meant a lot. When you look at it, we started well. There was a lot of talk, a lot of hype on the players. So obviously, everybody was in good spirit before it started. You know, it was even said that we have the best, that this crop of fast bowlers, the best ever fast bowlers that West Indies have assembled. And you on those kind of comments, you would expect better. Obviously, the major concern with the chief selector when he was speaking is obviously the batting. So the batting stayed true to form. And when you look at it, we still could not get the batsmen to change their mode of dismissal. We had some 19 LBWs.
19? That's a lot. That's a lot. Oh, my golly.
And they have bat contracts.
Mm. They do.
Luckily for them, you have bats and pads and gloves from the same sponsor.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is that when you look at it, a critical examination must be done of that management team. I think that head coach Phil Simmons has some questions, some serious questions should be asked of him when they come back. And I believe the director of cricket will be the one, and maybe the chairman of the cricket committee, I'm just calling positions, they might have a meeting. To debriefing of what went on, the fast bowlers. I have Roddy Essex, assistant coach, Troy Reefer, who has been given the task or the challenge of being the batting coach. Again, has not been able to get his methods through because obviously the batsmen struggle. So the batting coach, his methods obviously seem not to have worked.
Mm.
And he will also have questions to answer. And then the others, and then also another question as well, fitness. Because we saw Shannon Gabriel limping through a couple of test matches and a couple of days as well. Is he 100% fit? All these questions need to be answered because England have shown that if you rotate your players and you have, and England have also shown us, Andrew, that you can pick a squad and they can go into their squad and rest men and pick men from that squad. We had 15 men and we had a batting unit that was struggling. We had one extra batsman in Kumo Bonner. We don't want to consider Raymond Reefer a batsman. He's an all-rounder. But we had one extra batsman and we could not, or the selectors could not find space for Nkumo Bonner to play. Why? Isn't he good enough to play at test match level? And if he's not good enough to play at test match level, why have you selected him? Why was only two openers selected for that tour?
Yeah.
Because when Shane Dowers missed the ball and got struck in his face, Hope kept for a few, and then Joshua De Silva came out.
That's true.
But all these are questions that need to be answered. Mm-hmm. I know there's only a 50-man squad and only so many can go.
Yes.
And they look at performances. But we got to look deeper. We got to be more strategic in our thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that our selections need a bit more tinkering with. We need to think more outside the box.
Okay.
And bring more diversity into our cricket and our selections.
Mm-hmm. Well, stay with us. Of course, Kenny Benjamin, he's got to leave us very, very soon. I know he's got a big date, a hot date at around 7 o'clock tonight. Kenny, be careful. And of course, Suresh Raghunath has joined us as well, because we want to get a lovely flavour across the Caribbean. I know that Dr. Ford has got a question, but just before you come in, Dr. Ford, let's welcome a man from the land of Calypso, Suresh Raghunath. Mr. Raghunath, how are you, my friend?
Good evening, guys. I'm very well, thank you. Would have been a little bit happier had we done better in the series, but I'm good all the same.
Can you tell us, before we go back to Toby Radford, who I'm sure is keen to come back to be the batting coach to the West Indies side, and we can ask him that before he leaves, Toby, so you expect that from me. When you do an assessment, Suresh, of this, what went wrong in England with the West Indies side? Can you tell me?
Well, a lot has already been said about the different reasons for the defeat. But I think I'm very realistic about expectations.
Mm-hmm.
The result of this series is not surprising to me. It is actually what I anticipated. In fact, they probably exceeded my expectation in winning one of the test matches.
Say that again. Say that again, Mr. Raghunath. You're saying...
Once the ball was swinging around, with,
right?
Actually, talk about in the same program just before the season started.
Yes.
Talk about the conditions, and once the ball is doing anything, our batsmen struggle, and that is exactly what happened. And poor techniques were exposed. I don't think this is a case of a coach correcting this overnight. These are ingrained batting deficiencies in our regional players. This is not something that is new. Right? Look at the careers of these players and their modes of dismissals, and you would realize that our batsmen have a deficiency that results in a lot of them being LBW and bowl. And the English bowlers exploited that quite expertly. So I think, for me, the results were not altogether surprising. You look at the averages of the batsmen, you add them up, and you seldom would they add up to more than 200.
Daniel, so Mika does.
I see.
Nothing surprising, really.
Dr. Ford, any questions?
Yes. Well, we've seen two separate selection panels pick a cadre of players which are quite similar. So I think we can conclude that statistically and otherwise, based on the last few years, these are some of the better players that we have in the region. So the question is, what's the cause of their lack of their arrested development? Is it technical? Is it psychological? I mean, I think, Toby, you've been spent some time with them and seen them. What do you think the limiting factor is? Is it technical? Because you explain how you would train during between matches and expose conditions, so they should have a memory of that? Or is it psychological? If things go badly, does everything fall apart?
I think that's a really interesting point. I'll come back to that to that one. I think, everything's going well and then suddenly you have a bit of a hiccup and then things go rapidly downhill. Look, my view is I thought they would do well in this series, because if you look over the last three series, it was 4-4 in test matches between England and the West Indies going into this last game. This was a decider. This was the ninth game and the decider. And if we'd won it, we'd have beaten England 5-4. So let's not think that we're a bad side, because we're not a bad side. We beat them in the Caribbean last year. We won a test match at Headingley the year before. We've won another test match in Southampton. This is not a bad side. This is a side that won fairly and squarely 2 weeks ago, that was doing really well in the second game. The minute things went wrong in that second game, we have never come back, and we got worse and worse. And in the end, it looks like it was a game too many, for all the reasons that were said. The things that have really interested me on this tour, we had backup players. For whatever reason, those spare bowlers, the Shamar holders, we didn't use them. We went into a last game with two off spinners in England, which you'd normally do in Bangladesh and India. Right? We went in with three seam bowlers. And three seam bowlers, and of the three seam bowlers, Shannon's come back from a long-term injury. You know, these guys, you need four seamers in England. And as I said at the start, England had eight bowlers and they rotated eight seamers all the way through. We went with four exceptional bowlers who were getting more and more tired as the series went on, and it became more difficult. And suddenly the team starts going for 400, 500, And then there's more pressure on the batters when they bat because they're facing bigger scores. So I felt there was a need somewhere along the line to shake up the bowling, to keep it fresh, to keep the attack fresh. So I found that very interesting, to be honest, at the end of the tour.
All right. Well, Kenny is going to leave us very soon. Kenny, we want to see your face. Why don't you have your camera on, Kenny? Please turn that camera on so we can see that face in Antigua.
I'm actually on the move, Andrew. That's why.
Okay, you're on the move. All right, but you're always on the move, aren't you? Now, before you go, I know you got a big hot date at 7 o'clock. Should heads roll here, Kenny? Should anyone be fired after this?
Well, the thing about it is, and I like how Radford put it in terms of the team doing well, but this is England. Over the last couple of years, we haven't been doing well, yeah? But this series, high expectations, everyone felt we had a chance to beat England. Before I say heads roll, I need to dissect the whole tour. The whole management have to sit down with the director and so forth and dissect that. There have to be some explanation as to why only one change. People were failing, like Toby Radford said. We had a young, exciting fast bowler in Holder. He didn't play. Two off spinners in the last game in England. Fail, and we walked with extra, but he didn't get a chance to bat. I would want to hear what they have to say. Based on the explanation, Heads may roll, heads may not roll, but definitely they have to come with a really good explanation as to why we went up there and we're afraid to make changes.
Yes,
15. So you must believe that they were good enough, and the fact that you didn't make changes, something is telling me that your thought process wasn't clear. Your plans weren't all. You weren't confident in your plans either, and so. That is where I would look at to determine whether or not I want to continue with some of these individuals.
Well, Kenny, I want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. I know you've got your date there at 7 o'clock. So make sure you get home on time. Don't be out too late, Kenny.
Thank you very much, and you all stay safe, gents.
All right, good. So there you have it. Kenny Benjamin there in Antigua. I think he's a... Is he a Sweets man or is he an All Saints man? I'm not quite sure, but it's good to have him on the show. Of course, a little bit later on, sponsored by Wrong Hair Pharmacy, we're going to have your say, 4341790. So we're going to open the lines pretty, pretty soon. We've got Toby Radford with us, and of course, Philo Wallace is with us as well. And we've been recently joined by Shurif Ragunath. Now, let's come back to you, Shurif. No. You said that you didn't expect the West Indies to do well. In fact, you expect them to lose this series. But when you look at some of our batsmen, I mean, some of them are very poor. Let's look at some stats. I'm going to put my glasses on. Blackwood, 3 matches. Arvidsson's 35.16. Highest of 95. Brooks, 68. So we could maybe just try to get Kenny Benjamin out the system. We're certainly hearing him. Please, if you can assist me there. Thank you very much. We have Mr. Brathwaite, 3 matches, 176 runs, highest of 75, 29.3. Chase, 3 matches, 157 runs, averaging 26. I mean, what do you say about all this, Shurif Ragunath?
Well, you look at those same stats, even before they had gone to England. Look at the averages of the batsmen. And they have never really lit the world on fire. They've had good moments. And whilst I understand the optimism that the team would have done well, realistically, when you look at those statistics and you see where they would have done well, most of them hadn't done well in England before, except Shehop having one good test match in England. Mm-hmm. In 2017, he scored those 2 centuries. The conditions was always going to be against us once the ball was moving around. And look at our batsmen and look at their... records in regional cricket. Not many of them average even 40 in regional cricket, where the pitches are flat, the ball doesn't do much. You may have 2 or 3 good seamers on any of our regional teams. And these guys are struggling to average more than 40, right? Devon Smith continues to be the best batsman in the region year after year in terms of averages. Okay, this year that may not have happened, but he's... And I'm not putting in a plug saying that he should be selected, I'm just using him as a reference. He's the only regional first-class cricketer who probably has an average of over 40. And our test players, they don't have a first-class average that really is going to give you a great deal of confidence that when they play at test level, that they are going to do well. It is a work in progress. They are basically learning the trade on the job. Mm-hmm. And to ask them to conquer the English in English conditions over a three-match period was asking, in my mind, too much. One would have expected that they would have had a test match here and there where they do well, where things click. But that largely was dependent on dismissing the English team for a very low score and hoping that our batsmen showed up. And they did that in the first test, in the first inning, the one occasion that we scored more than 300 runs in the series. The totals, three of the six totals just below, were below 200. Mm-hmm. That is a reflection of what they are capable of. Right, to ask our batsmen to score 350 and 400 runs in English conditions on a consistent basis in a series to win matches is being unrealistic. And I think that goes back to our what's happening in regional cricket. We don't have a good, a strong domestic tournament that shapes them. And those who are making it onto our international or test team are guys who are mediocre at best. So they are learning the trade as they go along, and it's going to take a long time for them to really come to terms with that. In addition to that, we still don't have proper cricket academies that are honing these skills of these players. And let's not forget, we haven't played cricket for a few months because of COVID. We went to England, the guys didn't have many opportunities to go out in the middle, right? Except for two warm-up games, one of which was badly hampered by the rain as well. Mm-hmm. And in as much as we would have maybe wanted to see some rotation within the squad, you would have brought in, and look at Cornwall, for instance, the one change that came in, right? Cornwall didn't get a wicket. He looked out of sorts. And any one of those players you brought in, you run the same risk producing the results and looking lackluster as Cornwall would have. So you had, I think, in defense of the technical team, they didn't have too many options but to keep on playing those guys who were already playing, who had match practice and some measure of match fitness, right? I know the talk is about Shannon Gabriel and his fitness. Shannon Gabriel got the most wickets for us in the series. In the second test match, Sibley was dropped off Shannon Gabriel's bowling when he was on about 70 at a crucial time. He went on to together with Root to produce, with Stokes to produce a record partnership. In this last test match, Pope, when he was in his 20s, a relatively regulation catch was put down off the bowling of Shannon Gabriel, right, by Shane Dorich, and he went on to score 91. Those are things that the statistics wouldn't show, right? And let's be fair to the bowlers. They did their job. They did a good job, right? Our batters are the ones who failed us. And I want to agree with Toby Radford when he said that, you know, up until that last session on the fourth evening in the second test match, we were doing quite well. We were competing. We looked like we would have come out of the series. You know, at that stage, we might have gone into the last test match with a 1-0 lead still. But then Stuart Broad produced an excellent spell as he has shown over the history of his career that he has it up in him to produce match-changing spells. And that spell after tea, really, where we lost 6 wickets for 45 runs, cost us a test match because on the final day, we just couldn't cope with the pressure. And then it all went downhill thereafter. Mm-hmm. But all is not lost. There are still encouraging signs for the guys. And we just got to keep pushing on with them. Let's understand as well that we still have Bravo and Hetmyer to turn to as well. Not that I think they would have made a big difference in England anyhow. But they are two of our better players. So all is not lost. But for me, I am not surprised with the results, and I don't see this as something to be making any knee-jerk reactions and looking for changes, because what are you going to replace them with? Mm-hmm. And the technical team, we got to give the guys some time as well. You can only work with what you have. Mm-hmm. And in the circumstances, there were limited time to really work on these guys. Mm-hmm. So we need to give everybody a chance, and we have to back them and stick with them.
Mm-hmm. Toby, you agree with that?
Oh, look, it was 4-4 going into this ninth game, this decider, if you looked over the last 3 years. So, no, I totally agree. I also believe a lot of people played well. I think Jermaine Blackwood earned his place on this tour. He played really well. The 95 he got in that first match, excellent. Played some really good. We got a lot of starts, 40s, 50s, 70s, 80s. For whatever reason, people are getting out. They're either making a mistake or concentration is going. You've got to start turning those into hundreds, 150s, because then they'll be match-defining innings. At the moment, people were playing well. I mean, in that first match, pretty much everybody contributed. And you think, oh, fantastic, they're in a good place, they're confident, they're playing well. But we have got to start turning those scores into hundreds. We need hundreds. So that's the challenge for the batters. It's consistency and hundreds. The other thing, and it was sort of touched on before, is when things started to go a little bit wrong, why did they go so badly wrong? And why did confidence suddenly disappear from a team that had given England a hiding in their own backyard 2 weeks ago? And then suddenly 2 weeks later, it's almost as like we look, you know, we're afraid to bat first. We're afraid to make changes with the team. We suddenly look nervy when we had beaten up England in their own backyard and everyone was cutting out. I was loving it. I love it. I'm a West Indian art. I'm married to a West Indian. You know, and suddenly that confidence just drained away overnight. And it looked like that watching them on the field. And you think, well, 2 weeks ago, they were playing such great cricket. Where's that gone? And why does it disappear so quickly? Because I think they're things to look at, because you're always going to have these ups and downs in series and matches, but you've got to find a way to come back and be confident and positive. And you've got to remember what you did in Southampton 2 weeks ago. It's not a year ago, it's 2 weeks ago. So I think that whole confidence and belief, real belief in their individual abilities and as a collective. You know, if I was there, I'd keep reminding them, boys, it's 4-4 in the last 3 years. You can beat this team. You beat them last year. So I expected us to win because I think we're a very good side. We've got an outstanding bowling attack. Jason, Shannon, Roche, excellent. And we've got batters there who can bat. They need to be in the right place and they need to be confident and pumped up. What we don't want is to lose that confidence quickly and then find it completely ebbs away. And then people want to be away from there. You know, you still got to keep in there and fight because it's not always going to go your way, especially away from home. So look, I'm still positive. I'm still confident. I'm still in touch with some of those lads. I still rate them as players. They're good players. But we did, for whatever reason, we lost our way quite quickly. And I do think some of those decisions to not play some of the reserves, to keep the bowling fresh, I think those and winning the toss, you never win the toss at Old Trafford and bowl in a test match. You generally bat, it's a good wicket that will turn at the end of the game. So I feel that having bowled first and won at Southampton, it was almost like, well, we'll bowl first and the same will happen at Old Trafford. The stats at Old Trafford tell you you want to bat first. Mm. But having done that, we went and did it the following game as well. And suddenly you put yourself on the back foot chasing big scores. And it was always a bit of a slippery slope, I think, for men, for all those different reasons, which is a shame.
Toby, just before Dr. Ford comes in, if you were asked to become batting coach of the West Indies team again, would you say yes?
Oh, I always. Look, I didn't want to leave. I mean, we just beat England this time last year in the Caribbean. And then suddenly a new president came in. Pybus has got to go and everyone who was linked to Pybus. And obviously I was working for him as the batsman coach. I've been there on and off for about 8 years. I'm in a set up at HBC. I mean, I know these lads in and out. But no, just before the World Cup, 3 weeks before the World Cup, we were suddenly told we were all going. So I think seven of us all went. I had to come back to England. Pybus went back to South Africa. We were told that I think there was a statement made by the president that they wanted local coaches. And look, it was disappointing. I had a contract that was going to run until September. They wanted me to go and work with the A team in Antigua when I should have been at the World Cup. So it was hugely disappointing for me. You know, this has been a life project. I've spent 10 years. I remember Jason Holder coming into the academy as a 19-year-old, Shannon Gabriel as a 19-year-old, Darwish as a 19-year-old. Half of this team, Brooks, they all came through the HPC that I set up in Barbados, you know, 10 years ago. So I've seen it as a project. I've worked with them for years. I'm still friends with them. Mate, I'm passionate, as you can tell. I want them to win. So, you know, it was disappointing for me to suddenly lose a job that I thought I was doing pretty well. We were doing well. Team was in a great place. Suddenly the rug was pulled just before the World Cup, and that was it. And I've been watching it from afar now, like you. Yeah.
Dr. Ford, were you part of that, the firing of Toby Radford, Dr. Ford?
No, I wasn't. I hate to keep bothering Toby, but I mean, what he said
is so such a stimulating thing from some ways. So I really have two questions, but my first question is, I want to go back to being under PIBUS in the Caribbean, and the present thinking of the administration now is that the achievements of the team under PIBUS, even though the players praise him and seem to be comfortable, that he didn't have an influence in that, that it was something that was destined to happen. It was a team. He just happened to be there. And the achievement in the West Indies was reduced and belittled. I just want you to tell us, what do you think about the efforts of Mr. PIBUS during his short tenure as the acting coach? And then secondly, I want you to compare and contrast all the guys in the panel, Shea Hope as a one-day player versus Shea Hope as a test player.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, on Richard PIBUS, I thought he was exceptional, because I think where Richard PIBUS was very good was in setting the agenda of where he believed the team could go and getting the players to buy into, this is where we were heading. I remember the way he drew up on a flip chart, you know, what does world's number one look like? If we, guys, he said, if you took the world's best team, what is it that they do at test match cricket? And got the players to write down what they needed to deliver. Right, we've got to bat for 120 overs. We've got to get 350 plus. He had all these things and the players were coming up with it. So he gave the players ownership. And the players bought into this vision of what we were trying to deliver. So there were very clear targets. You had your batting groups, your bowling groups. And it was just, I thought he managed that really well. The other thing he did brilliantly, he put all the list of 11 players up and he put the England 11 up and he started to do matchups. And he said, Shannon, you've got to take more wickets than Anderson. And there were, it was great. It was this competition for players with the opposition number. He had all these kind of things. I thought he was exceptional as a motivator and a manager. And then what we had underneath that, the players bought into that. And then technically, I would deal with the batters. You had at that time Vaspert dealing with the bowlers. We had Esrun Crandon was there as well. Mushtaq was working as a mentor. We had a really nice staff. And I think it was all working well. Players knew what was expected. They were going and delivering. And we were servicing their needs. So I thought he was outstanding. I mean, clearly, look, it's not my job to get involved with politics. I don't want to get involved in politics. What I always loved with my West Indies was the players I worked with. I loved them and doing my job of coaching them batting and cricket. And that was it. So I've always stayed out of politics. But suddenly all of that was kind of, you know, we're in that good place. He's doing a good job. And then that sort of changes overnight just before the World Cup. And we've all got to move on with our own lives. So that was basically what happened there. And that was it, really. Yeah.
Philo, what's look at Shea Hope as a white ball cricketer and a test cricketer with the bat in hand. What's the difference? Is it it's an approach? Is it aggression? Or is it just that test cricket is harder? Why the success contrasted with the disappointing results?
I think we look at Shea Hope as a one-day player. He's a lot freer. He has a lot more confidence. He strikes the white ball with a lot of authority, gets into better positions. When you look at it, it's 300 balls, 50 overs. So to me, he's more relaxed as an ODI player. When it comes to test match cricket, I find Shea Hope starts to get very nervy and tense. His feet are all over the place. His back goes away from his body. There's no balance in his forward defensive. There's no balance in his attacking shots. And he's all sixes and nines. Even today, he started to look good. But then something just went into his mind and Toby would tell that all batsmen have a second of madness. And he pulled a length ball. He pulled a length ball straight up in the air and he looked at the toe of the bat. Whereas if he had played a defensive shot, it would be a better shot. But he was so into proving. And at test match level, you don't need to prove because you got so much time to bat that you can take your time and build an innings. Today was only required to bat today out. And I thought that Shea Hope was starting to look dangerous, but unfortunately, that rush of blood, that second of madness has you know, pushed all of that hard work to away. So as a one-day player, he has a better vision. He's more freer and clear in his mind. When at test match level, his mind is constipated. And I feel that it is because he has not played four-day cricket for Barbados in about 3 years.
Mm.
because he's been away, and plus when he comes back, Cricket West Indies are saying give him rest. They want rest, and it is mashing up the cricketers. The cricketers are not being able to rest and come back to a competitive situation. I think that the West Indies Cricket Board needs to look at how they're resting these players and allow them to play a bit more cricket.
Mm.
Even Jason Holder is another one. He captains the West Indies 50-test match squad. He doesn't even captain Barbados four-day team. So he gets no practice at captaining a team over a long period of time. His practice comes in test matches. And Ooh. That is something that the BCA also has to look at. Because if Jason is long-term captain for West Indies in test match cricket, he needs to captain the Barbados franchise. So we have contrasting events going on here with West Indies cricket and at the regional level. Because the regional level is supposed to help support that West Indies cricket. And because of our performances at the test level, if you look at the players, they are not playing enough regional cricket. So Shea Hopper's find himself being selected for test match cricket off of one-day form.
Shores, let's come to you now. Can I ask you this question, Mr. Raghunath? Do you think the West Indies team is strategic?
Can you repeat the question?
I'm asking, do you think the side is strategic?
Andrew, I didn't hear that clearly.
Okay, I'm asking about strategy. Do you think the West Indies side is strategic?
Well, I would like to think so, given that I think we have some very experienced personnel in the management setup. We have a captain who has been around now and a very good motivator, a very good leader. I would think that sufficient thought is going into it. They have the assistance of the technical persons with regard to video analysts and all of that. I think they are. But it's one thing to have strategies. The other thing is to execute it.
Mm.
And that's another thing altogether, because planning is one thing. Executing under pressure, it's a different ball game. And I mean, if you take Shane Dorridge, for instance, I remember in the first test match whilst he was batting, I sent a text to my brother in Canada telling him, you know, at that point in time, Shane would have had like about 20 odd. And I thought that he was looking like the best batsman on the team. He was looking so good. And by the end of the test match, something went wrong because they started to bowl him some short deliveries. He got struck. And psychologically, he seemed to have lost it. He didn't look the same player thereafter for the entire series. It may have even rubbed off on his wicket-keeping, which is also a tough job in English conditions. So I think, you know, the fact is that you can have good strategies, but that could be countered as well. And at the end of the day, it comes down to execution. And even that, you know, you may execute well, but the opponents could counter you as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's come back to Toby Radford now. By the way, at 7:30, we open the lines. Your Say, sponsored by Wrong Hair Pharmacy. I'm sure that you're going to be keen to certainly get involved. So that's going to come around 7:30, 4341790. When you were the coach, batting coach to the West Indies side, Toby, what would have been some of the challenges you had as batting coach with the West Indies side?
Well, look, there's always challenges because it's your job to get to know each individual player, what makes them tick, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, what are you working on. Over time, you really start to know your players. I mean, look, you know Craig Brathwaite, you know Craig. Craig, you've got to get forward. If you get stuck on the crease, you're going to get LBW. You know, so you know exactly the areas you're trying to work on with them, that you're trying to reinforce with them. As a batting group, you have your targets of what you're trying to achieve in your five-day cricket, periods of time that you want to bat. Certain bowlers you come up against, exactly what I was saying earlier about Broad, you know, how they're going to try and get you out. Right, guys, what have we got to do? We've learned from the last test, he's knocked us over. What have we got to do in the next test match? We've got to get out to crease. We've got to get on the bowling machine for a couple of days before. We're going to swing the ball in. We're going to replicate Stuart Broad in practice. So all of those types of things, discussions, specific practice with the players to give you the best chance to go and win a cricket match. It doesn't guarantee it. It gives you the best chance. And I think that's all you can do. And that's all you can expect those players to do. And if they're not good enough when they've done everything they can do in preparation, it's like an intern exam, isn't it? You've done your revision and you go and do your exam. And if the questions come up and you still get revised, that's just bad luck. But you do the best you can do in preparation to give yourself a chance to go and deliver. So it'll be those types of decisions. But a lot of individual, it's working out what does Shea Hope need? What does Craig need? What does, you know, Jason Holder need? Because they're all different and they all play in different ways. So you've got to understand their game and know what you're working on with them.
Well, certainly, Doc, I mean, when we look at the stats, yeah, Campbell, 3 matches, batted 6 times, not at once, 84 runs, averaging 16.80. Dowries, 3 matches, 126 runs, averaging 21, highest of 61. Let's come to Shea Hope now. 3 matches, batted 6 times, 105 runs, highest of 31, averaging 17.50. That kind of information, Philip Walsh, will not inspire confidence.
No, not at all. And it is going to be important, Andrew, how quickly these guys get back into the nets and who is going to be assigned to work with them in relation to getting their batting back to where we expect it to be. Because when you look at those numbers, John Campbell as an opening batsman has scored 84 runs. Toby Radford will tell you the county will drop him fast. He could not survive in the county side. You know, Shea Hope, who came here as one of our leading batsmen, struggled. And he went to school in England. So the swinging ball should really affect Shea Hope. Why is it that he struggles so badly? And in six innings is a lot of innings. Mm-hmm. And then you're in a bubble and you're at two venues where they have loads of equipment, indoor facilities. You can go and practice. So sometimes when you're struggling, you need to do the extra work. I'm not saying that he did not do it, but that is what is required. So these guys now have to come back to the Caribbean with limited practice facilities and try to get maximum out of it. So I don't know how they're going to get a balance. And plus the CPL is just around the corner. I don't know if Cricket West Indies is going to allow them to play CPL cricket. And then there's the IPL sometime later. So these guys now have to come back home and they have to work. They have to manage their time and they have to get people around them who are going to help them, Amju, to come back and get some confidence.
Again, coming on the back of that, I think what you want is honesty with each of those players. So when they're debriefed, you really go through, even sit and go through the footage with each player, you know, strengths and weaknesses, areas that they've got to work on, so that, you know, you see improvement. Because what you don't want to do is go from one series to the next and see exactly the same flaws in the following series. You want to see, for them and for the team, you want to see gradual improvement. So I think those debriefs that you have are really, really important with the management staff. And there's honesty with the players, and then that work is then done with them. They have to have a period of work. And that's why I come back to the importance of something like the HPC. I mean, my time in the Caribbean over those years, the one thing that always frustrated me really was the difficult facilities, lack of bowling machines, lack of nice facilities for the players. The talent in the Caribbean compared with England is way beyond it. The natural ability of the Caribbean player is way ahead. But I tell you what, even when I was West Indies batting coach, there were times when I couldn't get hold of a bowling machine to work with some of the international players. I'd come back to England, I'd walk into a school, and there'd be 5 bowling machines, 6 indoor lanes. And you just think of how some of these other countries, right, they're not better players. They have better investment in facilities to allow them to hit ball after ball, day after day, and the average player becomes good. We have exceptional talent. Mm. We haven't always got the facilities and the places for those players to go and become better. And I'd love to see, honestly, if I had the money, I'd put it in myself to buy some more bowling machines, to get some cheap halls put up, even though it's the Caribbean. I know it does rain. I've been wet a few times out there. But even some cheap halls, bit of lighting, where guys can go in when it, you know, in indoors sort of facility, hit some balls on a machine to improve in these areas so their technique gets better and the game will hold up. Doesn't matter where they go in the world, they can then hold up against the best players that they come up against. Because I know the talents there. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've worked with it for a number of years. But I would love to see a little bit of investment in some of those facilities. And that's my honest take of 10 years of being there, having come from the outside and come back. I just think sometimes these guys are spoilt in schools in England. And you think, God, I'd love some of this to ship it over to some of the islands of the Caribbean. I really would.
Mm. Doc?
Yeah. I know that the CPL is almost upon us. And because of COVID-19, we won't be having a lot of players from abroad being involved. So the regional players will be of the utmost importance. But when you look at the 25 that's been in an intensive camp in the UK for the last several weeks, are we doing them a disservice by putting some of them into this type of instant cricket where
techniques and the sort of skills you need for the longer game get eroded and bad habits become ingrained. So do you think that it's time that Cricket West Indies find a way to remunerate players so that they don't damage their brand and their ability with CPL, cricket like the CPL?
A question for Suresh. Suresh, can you take that one? Mr. Raghunath?
I don't know where they are going to find the kind of resources to keep the players under contract and tell them they can't play T20 cricket, because I think it's a case now of players being able to adapt to the different formats, and rather a situation where you are prescribing to them what cricket they should play or should not play. And in today's world, the top cricketers generally are able to make the transition. In the West Indies, we are affected a little bit more by T20 cricket, but I don't think it's fair to just take the players and tell them, well, look, you cannot play T20 cricket. That's what cricketers want to play. But I think the point that Toby Radford has made about the facilities and having the necessary equipment available across the region for their development is a much bigger point. And T20 cricket can help their development as well. But I think we need better facilities across the region, more indoor facilities, better training regimen. I don't think that the Professional Cricket League has produced what we expected, but it has to be persevered with. But a lot more has to be done to prepare our players mentally and physically for the rigors of Test match cricket.
All right. Stay with us. We're going to pause for business calls. When we come back, we're going to open the lines for your say. Of course, Mason and Guest is brought to an association with the very good friends at Wrong Way Pharmacy and the Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
When the double draw, you're playing with the mega ball. It's tripling, you can triple your winnings. Just for one more dollar, you can play from a spot one right up to a spot six. Then you wager another dollar, and that's how you mega ball it. Bronze mega ball, 30,000. Silver mega ball, 40,000. Gold mega ball, 50,000. More and more and more, you're winning. Put down another dollar, and when you win, you holler. That's how you triple it with the mega ball.
Make your winnings even bigger. Call for the mega ball today. Promotion ends August 8th, 2020.
Round Hair Pharmacy is your friendly neighborhood pharmacy that offers fast, reliable, courteous, and caring service. You can fill your prescriptions and consult a private pharmacist. They offer delivery service, quick sourcing of drugs, diabetic, cholesterol, and free blood pressure checks. After hours, call them at 266-6587 or 537-7863. WhatsApp at 266-6587, fax at 537-7865, or email roundhairpharmacybarbados@gmail.com, or upload your prescription to their website, roundhairpharmacybarbados.com. Roundhair Pharmacy, spelled R-O-U-N-D-H-A-Y, Pharmacy, number 3, Warner Court Plaza, Warren, St. Michael. Get your prescription filled. Visit their website, www.roundhairpharmacybarbados.com. Spell R-O-U-N-D-H-A-Y.
All right, and thanks to Wrong Hair Pharmacy. Your say, time to go to the telephones. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Yeah, good night, Andrew.
Good night to you. You've got Philo Wallace, Toby Radford, and Suresh Raghunath, and Dr. Ford.
But I want to make a correction to you. I hear you say we went to England with high hopes. We went to England with sheer hope, not high hope.
Oh! I like
that
one.
I can tell you, and the people there are not calling a spade a spade.
Mm.
From the time the England bowlers got aggressive and started buying the short ball, all batsmen started to retreat. That's what really happened.
Oh.
Check them and see all of them hanging on the bat, and then when the ball up there, lunging forward at the ball.
Right.
That's what really wrong. I don't know. And Mr. Radford, is Mr. Radford you say?
Yes, Toby Radford.
Is he wearing glasses?
No, he's not. I don't see him. He's on Zoom and he's not wearing glasses.
Because he said we have a strong team. Those fellas don't even look physical fit.
Okay.
I don't know. He could say we have a strong team. That batting lineup is woeful, man.
Okay. Thanks for your contribution. Let's take another one. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest. You're safe.
Hello. Hi, good night.
Good night to you, sir.
Hi. Right. There's something that we have been overlooking for years, right? We talking about the management, the structure and everything. But the fundamental problem of our players, they do not play sufficient professional cricket.
Mm.
We can have all the camps in the world. Ain't nothing like being on that pitch in a competitive level. As far as I'm concerned, the regional system is a farce. Because we have mediocrity playing against mediocrity. Can't produce anything. In our heyday, I always got to go back to the heyday because that's the only time I can enjoy cricket. Most of our players play professional cricket, big Curry Cup, Sheffield Shield, County Cricket, or League Cricket.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And they still needed the practice. The practice came natural because they were professional. Our guys are semi-professional. We're coming back here now to amateur.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And even playing, some of them have been playing cricket, like Jason Holder. When last Jason, all of them play for Barbados on a regular basis.
Right. Caller, do you have a question, though? Because this is a segment where we want to keep it very tight. If you've got any questions, I've certainly got one for Toby. Do you have a question for anyone? Sure, it's Phil or Wallace or Toby?
No, I actually agree with what Raghunath said.
Mm.
This is just comments.
Right.
No question.
Okay, thanks. All right, let's go to another call. Hello, welcome. Your say.
Hi, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
I'm peaceful. I normally have to WhatsApp you to get my messages through, but I'm on tonight.
Mm.
So just make my contribution quickly.
Okay, I'm happy.
I want to say that I was very, very disappointed with the strategy of this West Indies team. And I think Jason must be held accountable.
Ooh.
I was very disappointed on the eve of the test match where he came out in defense of Shea Hope, who has an indefensible record, Andrew.
Mm.
Poor test career over 3 years. And he went and said he had full confidence in Shea Hope. From that time, I said West Indies are destined to fail. I think that it was inexcusable to play practically the same team right throughout the series.
Right.
I just want to say quickly, from the time we left the Caribbean, we said your batting was our weakness. And I WhatsApped you and said that I would have included Raymond based on his batting ability and the ability to give us some overs in the middle. So I know, looking back, everyone's going to complain about Carwall. But I saw Carwall addition in the team as an opportunity to increase the batting. But I would not have dropped Azhari Joseph. I think he was harshly dealt with.
Yes.
To leave him out. And play the unfit Gabriel.
Right.
So my changes would have been Carwall and Raymond in for Gabriel and Shea Hope.
All right. Thanks for your contribution. We're going to continue, of course. What we're going to do is to try and get some reaction. This is a period, of course, 4341790 menu. Got to keep it tight and, of course, ask your questions. But just let me go to Toby Radford. Toby, the professional league in the Caribbean, is it good? What changes would you make?
I haven't seen enough of it in recent times to make a really honest opinion of it. The bits I have seen in the past don't always get the best players playing in it. The pitches I've seen haven't always been of the best standard.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the scores can reflect that. So it can make certain bowlers look better than they are. It might make batters look not quite as good as they are. And figures don't always reflect. I don't think the quality of pitches that I've seen there over the years would be as good as the county pitches in the UK, for sure. There clearly are some good pitches, but I don't think across the board they would be as good. There are some very good players over there. But as I say, whether you're always getting the best players in and around is another case in point.
Mm.
You know, for me, I think there is a level you want to bring up in all of those areas. I come back to what I said before: facilities, equipment, pitches, net, the quality of nets. I think if you're looking to raise the bar of the quality of player, you need to invest somehow in all of those different areas. And then, you know, players can play on a surface, they can trust the bounce, they can bat for longer periods because they know the ball is not going to hit them on the ankles or go flying off their glove. You know, all those things make a huge difference to the quality of the player that comes through. So that would, you know, I come back to what I was saying before, I would look for trying to invest. If you want long-term success, I think there has to be an element of investment in those areas as well. It's not just on the player. You know, the players are an end product of all of those things, in my opinion.
Just before we go and take a couple of calls, just a quick reaction. Fellow, the caller spoke about Jason Holder. You thought he handled the side well in terms of captaincy in the series?
And you really look at it, Jason handled the side well in the first test match. Okay, we won that test match. You know, we won it convincingly in the end. The second and third test match, when you look at the way how Jason handled the side, again, we're seeing deficiencies in his aggression. I don't think he's aggressive enough. Toby mentioned it earlier, and when Ben Stokes decided to come around the wicket, we saw field changes and stuff like that. We didn't see a lot of aggression coming from our captain, and that's our bowlers did not show the aggression. And then, obviously, when Jason came out and defended Shea Hope, you know, and he continued, and he failed. And then it is a massive statement to defend a man who hasn't scored runs in a long time in test match cricket. Mm. But yet you had the extra batsman in Bonner. You did not play him. So you went down the road with Shea Hope, and Shea Hope did not deliver for you. So that's a massive responsibility for a captain to take on board. And sometimes we need to be honest, Andrew, with ourselves and our West Indies cricket. Mm-hmm. If West Indies cricket is going to move forward, sometimes you got to make some harsh decisions. You got to drop your friend to bring in the man who's going to fight and perform for you. Simple as that. You cannot pick a friend and keep getting beat. When the friend gets dropped, then Blackbird smoke your pipe. So we have to make hard, honest decisions. And I'm very serious. West Indies cricket is not going to move forward, Andrew, if we don't make hard decisions. Toby Radford just said it. We need to spend some money on getting the infrastructure and getting some equipment in. So giving them fancy equipment and pretty clothes and shoes and things, that's not cutting it. You need to get the fundamentals right. And our basics are bad. So if our basics are bad, tell me how are we going to be good that we expect? I expect them to win the series. I'm like, Toby, when we won the first test match, that's fine. All we need to do is hold ourselves up in Old Trafford. And we released it loose from the Englishmen nets, and the men strangled us.
Oh, dear.
So we have to be serious about what we want. Winning series or looking pretty?
All right. Hold on. Okay. Sure, stay with us. We got a couple of calls backed up. 434-1780. Of course, if you're calling from overseas, 1246. Let's take a call. Hello, welcome.
Hello. Welcome, Andrew.
Yes, welcome. You're on air.
Andrew, I like the way how you did commentate your cricket. And when you say a man is bad, he's bad.
Yes.
And I feel the West Indies selectors are very, very poor.
Oh, dear.
And they would not look up to their cricket. And when you say that, you should carry this body, they want to cut your throat. But what I can say now is that Campbell should not be down there. The boy from Guyana, who is
from Guyana,
all these wickets. You know, he's spinner.
Oh, Parmo should have been there.
Parmo get the most wickets in the series they play here.
Right.
And they carry Cornwall and all these players, Wycan and all of those. And do the rest of the letters want shaking up.
Shaking up.
And I am very proud of what Phil was said tonight. But we can't afford to put all the way on Phil Simmons. Simmons doing a job, and he asked the man to go there and back. Eddie May go there and trade him, and you can't blame Simmons.
Right.
What Simmons need to do, if you can't hear what I'm doing, you will have to sit down and wait on your chance to come again.
All right. Thanks for your contribution. All right. Let's go to Sharif now. Mr. Raghunath, do you think that Phil Simmons is a good coach?
The record proves that. Wherever Philip Simmons has coached, they have done well.
Are you sure about that? Where's your record to support that?
I am, but I don't think this is a question of the coach. This is a question of more of a cricketing system that has not done well.
No, but I've asked you a specific question. I'm asking you.
I think I've answered that by saying I don't think Philip Simmons is a bad coach. I don't think that.
And that is based on what?
You can bring the best coach in the world to coach in the West Indies. With the current structure that we have, we are not going to get any better results than what Philip Simmons will get.
Okay, I see. Okay, let's take a couple more calls. Your Say, sponsored by Wrong Hair Pharmacy. Hello.
Good night.
Good night to you.
West Indies start wrong because when he told them to get beat in this second test, then she never put back on them in this last test.
Yes.
Then she'll go on and bat first.
Yes, of course she'll bat first. And in fact, ma'am, The record shows at Old Trafford, a team that did what we did by winning the toss and giving it away, as we would say in Caribbean parlance, they've never won. So where's the data? I mean, somebody clearly should have told the management team that. Don't you agree, Shores Raghunath?
Yeah, they should go on back. They should not give away them hand.
Right. A question for Surit. I'm sure that Phil Simmons should have known that, Surit.
Like most people, I disagreed with the decision. But at the end of the day, okay, it's not just about the decision whether to bat first or bowl first.
Right.
The point is, did we bat well when we got the chance to bat?
We didn't.
And that what the major problem was. Let's take this one step at a time. Up until the fourth evening on the second test match, West Indies was ahead and looking good to finish the series, the second test match, with a 1-0 lead. No one would have looked back and said, well, we made a mistake by batting second. But we are now with 20/20 vision, hindsight, finding all the problems and so on, right? But the point is, whether we batted first or second wouldn't have made much of a difference to us. We lost more than a day in this test match. And look at today, for instance. Had we batted half an hour more, the test match would have been drawn because the rains came. So whilst we may harp about the decision whether we batted first or second, I think the main point is it would not have changed the results given the way we have approached the batting aspect of things. For all you know, we might have lost the test matches maybe even earlier.
All right. Another call. Can we take another one? Yes, we can. Hello, welcome, Mason and Guest.
Mr. Mason.
How are you, my friend? You're very formal.
This is Mohammed Nasser.
Oh, Mr. Nasser, how are you?
I'm very fine, sir. Let me say good night to your guest there.
Right.
Hello. And
Toby Radford, yes. And Serge Raghunath, your favorite batsman from Trinidad.
Right. Okay. Now, I want to say something. I believe that it's time enough that the West Indies accept that all players are not aggressive. I think we need to get aggression to players. I'm not talking about bullies or nothing, but see, Richards, I wish we could find a coach or a manager like Richards to carry the team. Now, I have nothing against the coach that is there now. But the truth is, every time they show him on TV, he looks sad. He seems not there properly attired. When you're a coach, you've got to look aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
When our captain hurt his finger and fell on the ground, yes, he was in pain, but Richards would have stood up, shake that finger, even though he's going to have it fixed. But no, you can't roll it on the ground and wait for somebody to run out there to you. You're showing weakness to your team. What do you all think about these things? I mean, you know, we might be looking at the cricketers, but we got to look and see how the cricketers are being managed and who the managers are. You need aggressive players, but to get them aggressive, you need aggressive management. And you need aggressive coaches. I'm not talking about bullies. I'm talking about people tell you, don't worry about that. You're in the first man, get beat with two balls, try to hit the next one for six. You need aggressive, and I think the West Indian players are too soft.
They're too soft.
And that's one reason I be the end of trouble.
All right. Thanks for your contribution, Mohammed. Always good to hear from you. Let's go to Toby now. Toby Radford, what do you make of Phil Simmons as a coach? Is that a fair question to you?
I don't know. I know Phil Simmons as a guy. I've never worked with him. So I don't, you know, I know he obviously did a very good job in Ireland. He went out, did a good job in Afghanistan. You know, he comes in with pedigree. People who have played under him say he's good to work with, very calming influence. You know, I would imagine, he understands the game. He's been in the game for 30 or more years, so he knows the game. Look, he's got a good pedigree, and I wouldn't put everything here that's gone on this tour on Phil Simmons. I think it's a lot of different things. And don't forget, he would be one of a number of selectors when they're selecting the team. So when we're talking about selection of the team, selection of the toss, I don't think it's generally one person. You know, you're talking about different people having their input. So I certainly wouldn't, I wouldn't put anything on Phil. And it would be unfair of me to comment on Phil as the way he coaches when I'm not in that dressing room with him to see him at first hand in terms of how he operates. You know?
Philo, what do you think of Phil Simmons as a coach?
Andrew, there's a lot of the powers that be obviously believe that Phil Simmons is the man to take our cricket forward.
Mm.
Andrew, I have a lot of respect for Phil. I've played with him. I know him quite well. You know, everybody believes that he has a lot of success he's had success as a coach. He was at Ireland. He was at Afghanistan. For one reason or another, he left those jobs. And he was unceremoniously dismissed from Cricket West Indies. And they saw it fit to bring him back and offer him a contract, which obviously he has not refused. And if he's been given the mandate to take our cricket forward, Andrew, I would just like to see clearer strategic thinking coming from Phil Simmons. He's head coach. And the head coach has a lot of power and authority now. It's different to when I used to play where the manager gets involved. The manager seems not to really get involved in cricket. The head coach seems to be the man who deals with everything. And the captain obviously has his power as well. So a lot of responsibility has been trusted on Phil Simmons. And sometimes I would like to just have a clearer picture coming from Phil Simmons in relation to how he's going about taking our cricket forward. Now, we started this series well, but we finished badly. Mm-hmm. Who is to take responsibility? The captain or the coach or that entire backroom staff? I'm not pinning it on one person. I just want clear answers and a clear picture. What is going to happen next after this England series?
Well, Philo, we want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. It was certainly a pleasure. So try and get some rest, Philo. What time is it now in England? What time is it now?
It's 12 minutes to 1.
12 minutes to 1. Yeah. Pass your bedtime, Philo. We want to thank you. Get some sleep, Philo. You need it.
I need it.
Yes. And of course, it looks as if George is already in bed. what are you doing? Are you driving there? I'm looking at you on Zoom.
No, man. I'm about to play. I told you I had an engagement. I'm playing tennis now. You know, that's my new sport. So I'm in a tournament and I'm here at the venue. Under one of the floodlights, getting myself ready to go on the
All
court.
Right. We want to thank you for coming through and talking to us. Always good to hear from you, young Mr. Raghunath. Enjoy the rest of your
thank
night.
You, and it was a pleasure chatting with you guys. Philo, take care, buddy, and all the best to Toby and everybody else. Take care.
And to you.
All right. Final couple of seconds to you, Toby, because we want to end, of course. We lost the Honourable Owen Arthur recently, and we want to end with a discussion. Well, it was really good. It was in this studios that we certainly had a very good time. We're going to end with that. But the final word is with you, Toby. The side is coming back to the Caribbean. What would you say to Jason Holder and his men having lost to England 2-1?
Well, you've got to deal with the emotional baggage. They'll be very disappointed. Look, they wanted to if they didn't win the series, they wanted to come back with the trophy and tie the series. Having had 1-0 start, I think they'll be very upset that the last two games went the way they did. I think they've got to get rid of that, you know, negative emotion, any way that they do that individually. And then at some point, you've got to then reconvene. And I think it would be a debrief of what did we do well? What didn't we do so well? How do we go forward? And that would be collectively and individually. You've got for everyone's individual game, the good and the bad. How do we keep going forward? It's all about improving. We're all improving all the time. We're all learning all the time. So it would be in the calm light of day, not straight away, a couple of weeks down the line, get people together individually, collectively, and plan the way forward. There were lots of positives. Honestly, there were lots of positives and people who did well out of the tour. Yeah. It's just a shame that it ran downhill quite quickly in the last couple of weeks, having looked as if it was going to be an outstanding tour and they were going to win this, win the series, keep the cup and bring the cup back to the Caribbean. That isn't to be, but as I've said earlier tonight, I think there's a lot of positives, but they've got to sit down the cold light of the day and plan the way forward.
Thank you very much, Toby. We're going to have you back on the show sometime soon. We really appreciate your time. Thanks you, Dr.
Nice
Ford,
to speak
as
to
well.
You.
Yes, on February the 19th last year, we had an evening with Sir Garfield Sobers. And do you know that Owen Arthur was very much a part of that program, and it's fitting that we go back to some moments when I thought that perhaps the best program that we ever had on this show involved Owen Arthur, who departed 2 or so days ago, and the right excellent Sir Garfield Sobers.
I think we have our former Prime Minister Owen Arthur on the line. Hello to you, sir. How are you, my friend?
I'm here at the office with the expenditure.
All right. I'm sure you want to say hello to your very good friend, Sir Gary.
I'm the cigar. How are you? Why are you keeping that company?
Because I'm getting away from those dominoes setups.
Sir Gary, I did not introduce the subject, and I'm going to have to clear the air once and for all this evening if you persist with this piece of propaganda.
you're very good at doing that kind of thing, aren't you?
No, I have resigned from politics, sir.
Well, what is this thing about dominoes, Owen? I mean, is it that you were defeated or you won?
Well, not at all. When it was Prime Minister of Barbados, I used to look to meet the Barbadian community where they lived, or in circumstances with which they were familiar. So I used to meet the Barbadian community at a pub in Peckham, owned by a Barbadian called Johnny called Pepper.
Yes.
And when they came down to Barbados, I entertained them at the official residence.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderfully. And on one occasion, the guy came.
Right.
And the guy...
First of all, I just in the pier there, you invited me. Okay, right.
He will let me finish. I have to give my invitation.
Right.
And we were having a wonderful evening, so we indulged in some dominoes. And the guy picked me a partner. Now, if you know the guy is a perfectionist.
Right.
So he had me 5 gloves, and I got out. My note is that the guy, as a perfectionist, if he reads his partner, had fair juice and he didn't play, he would say he don't have it, so he would read it for something else. Mm-hmm. So he decided to take advantage of his instinct for perfection. So in the second round, he got a 6 glove.
Right.
And he told the guy, and you have to hear this, I said, the guy, you are the official resident of the Prime Minister of Barbados. The Prime Minister of Barbados cannot take advantage of a national hero. So do not believe your lying eyes. I did not give you a 6 month again. And I'm not going to tell anybody about it. But here I tell our people, and Mason, everywhere yes. I go now, the guy is challenging me to a domino match. And I want to use this occasion publicly
right.
to say that I will agree to play him only on one condition.
What's that?
That he has decided to have Everton Week as his partner.
Right.
And between the two of them, that is 172 years of Barbadian antiquity. You know, once a man, twice a chain.
Right.
So in order for me to place the Everton and Cigarette service at Domino's again, I will have to officially advise the Chelsea board so that I don't get arrested for Chelsea.
Indeed.
I might be his partner.
Right. On your program.
Yes.
I'm accepting the talents from Cigar Fee Stores for a rematch in the domino game. He can pick his partner.
Right.
At a place and time of his choosing.
Right.
And this matter is going to be brought to a happy conclusion. But I told the man that I did not success it and in our court as he thought happened. Do not believe his lying eyes.
So Gary, let me ask you a question. Is it true that Orphan when Arthur bring a fella, a player, your player?
He did.
He did.
Oh, okay.
Because I did not know anybody around that really wanted to play dominoes on that night.
Okay, I see.
And Owen said, I will get you someone to play with you.
Right.
And I felt so happy because I enjoy dominoes, and I said, I will challenge you under those circumstances.
Yeah.
And there we went on. Now you had your say.
I did not have any intention of playing dominoes on that day with the guy. I turned up to entertainment guests from England. It so happened, so I didn't plan a partner. And may I also add for the record that he and his partner had me at 5 gloves.
That is true, but that's where we should have been, of course. Against your ability as a domino player, of course we should be there.
I see.
Brought a man and picked him and bring him to me, and then after we had you in that situation, he decided that I better do the right thing by Owen.
Then let me hear what we try.
And we were playing very, very good, and all of a sudden things swung. And we got down to the last game when Owen had us 5 love, and I think it was, 5 games to about 3.
Right.
And I studied the game, and I saw the card came off, and I said, this is the way out. So I leave the 3 at one end, and I put on the juice at the other end, because I know my partner got double tray and tray juice. And I knew that Owen was very weak with the juices.
Mm-hmm.
I think Owen passed. And my partner decided to kill his double tree and swing two juices.
Really?
Yes. Of course. But we would never say that because it was set up.
If you put down the juice, cause your partner to feel that you were playing juices.
I see. I see. And all of a sudden, he's run. For the last 6 months, he's been saying, oh, we must have a game. He and Timothy Boyce, uh-huh, been ringing me nearly every week.
Yes, yes, he spoke to me today.
Yeah, said they want to have a game, they want to have a game. So I set up the game. I said, okay, when they're ready, let me know. Up to now, I still don't know when they're ready.
So Garfield, I have told you that I am only going to play dominoes with you again if you inform the child care board that any blows that you get were as a result of your wishing them, because I don't want to get arrested for child abuse.
Well, if you haven't been arrested yet, you'll never get arrested.
So, the game is on?
Yes, the game is on. Indeed it is.
Have you told Everton?
I just want to say for the record,
right,
that all those stories that tell you that he got saved up by being as Prime Minister of Barbados, as you know, it would be totally against protocol for Prime Minister of Barbados to six love a national hero as the official resident. It simply could not happen.
Right. Yeah, that's quite
right,
true.
Right, indeed.
You remember what you said to me that night? I would never tell anybody that Isaac Slav the national hero.
Mm-hmm.
And next morning, about 6:30,
right,
one of my great friends called me and he said, I heard you've been playing dominoes last night with the Prime Minister. And I was waiting for the big blow. Mm-hmm. And then he says, and he told me that Isaac Slav you. And I said, well, he wasn't supposed to tell anybody, but there you are. Was that true? Or is that true?
David.
Is that true?
You can pass on no one, I'm Owen.
But I'm ready. I'm ready wherever you are. You get your partner, and Everton and I will take you on.
Indeed.
But I got to make sure that that fella doesn't have the little signals.
No signals, yes.
I just wanted to put on the record, though, that despite the incident in Domino's, that I'm so pleased to be able to about Cerberus prep briefly on a program that dealing with Cerberus to say this.
Right.
That he occupies a special place in our social history. It's not about cricket. Mm-hmm. That in 1966, when we had to deal with the issue of independence, Errol Barrow and others were in London negotiating our independence.
Right.
But Garfield Cerberus on the cricket fields of England was asserting the domination of Barbados and validated our claim to independence by his performance on the cricket field. And if there was any doubt that we, as the world's smallest independent country, could make it, it was really by the symbolic and the substantive performance of Garfield Cerberus on the cricket fields of England, where we needed validation that we could really, truly be a glorious independence country. And it was on that basis, quite frankly, that my cabinet decided that we had to honor him.
The winning song of Network Sports.
All right, so wonderful memories indeed. In fact, we rated as perhaps the best program on that occasion. It was Owen Seymour Arthur, who has now gone to the great beyond, and of course the right excellent Sir Garfield Cerberus. And I spoke to him quite often. In fact, the Wednesday before he died, I spoke to him for about an hour and 23 minutes. And if there's one thing I remember traveling from Barbados through to St. Vincent to Grenada, the Prime Minister of St. Vincent was on the plane. I'll leave you with this one, Dr. Ralph Gonzales. And I said to him, what do you think of Owen Arthur? And he said, a CARICOM meeting never started until Owen Arthur spoke. May he rest in peace and rise in glory. I'm Andrew Mason. Here's hoping for a better tomorrow. It's goodbye for now.